All right, so just by way of a short review from what we were doing the last couple weeks, let's suppose you're talking to an unbeliever who says that the existence of God is just an opinion I hold. How can I prove that God exists? This is going back to, like, all the way to the first couple of weeks. Anybody remember the short answer? Can you prove? What's that?
You don't have to.
You don't have to? Well, that's pretty much true. That is true. But there is something that you could say, and that is without God, you can't prove anything. Without God, you can't prove anything. Somebody says, how can you prove God exists, like Andrew just said? And the answer is God is the precondition of all proof. That is what presuppositional apologetics is based on. God is, in fact, the precondition of all proof. Because what they take for granted when they assume the laws of nature, whenever they're doing science or anything that takes expected ends, they use logic, for instance, or whenever they appeal to moral absolutes, they are missing the fact that these things are only sensible. They only make sense if God exists. So the proof of God's existence is that without him, you can't prove anything. And that is a fact. You could say that, and that literally answers the argument. Now, let's suppose that you're talking to another unbeliever who asks you to give an argument to support the truth that we are not products of evolution, or we could call it blind physical science. Blind physical science. In other words, prove that Darwinianism is a lie and the creation by God is truth. Well, for one thing, as we've already learned, there are tremendous, so many amounts of absurdities in the theory of evolution. In fact, that there's so many absurdities that when the evolutionists get around to try to defend evolution, all they can do is give us philosophical arguments rather than scientific understanding to account for how man came about. Remember how, for instance, just one example, remember how the survival of the fittest proved to be nothing more than a claim that the survivors are the ones that survive. It's ridiculous. Survivors are the ones that survive. That's exactly what that says. Or the theory of evolution also makes us believe that life came from non-life, intelligence came from no intelligence, morality from non-morality, and on and on and on we could go. You should also understand if the argument is that we are products of blind physical science, we should note that the blindness of chance literally undermines physical science. So when people say, I think physical universe operates in a blind way or by random happening or a chance explosion, or that the physical universe itself accounts for our origin. The person has, without putting it right up there where you can see it, he's contradicted himself, literally. Because if all of it's blind, if our origin theory is blind, it can't account for anything. It's blind. So your origin theory is blind. It's meaningless, in other words. So that would undermine all of our science and logic and moral, absolute morals as well. So that's just a short review of some of the things that we've been looking at. And any questions with any of that stuff? You want to go back and hash out some of those arguments?
Right now, John MacArthur's doing a series. He wrote a book called The Battle for the Beginning. He's doing...
Oh, interesting. That's a cool name.
So it's on Grace to You. You can go online and even catch up. He's a ways into the series right now.
Well, I'm sure he does a much finer job than I have. So
a lot of things that you have said is the exact same things he has said.
I would hope so. But I'm sure that anything on Grace to You, most things on Grace to You, 99%, just really great stuff.
And it's, John MacArthur really good. Has such and a great there's ministry. There's another man that's on there that he used something that he's going through Job right now and how God told him how... with all the creation and stuff.
Sure.
And he read something from that book.
Yeah, well, it's wonderful that we have the Bible. I mean, really. It's the source of all of our truth. And not just Job, there's many, many, many verses in the Psalms, Genesis, Revelation even, all over the book, all over the entire Bible that you can go to time and time again. And remember, we've been saying for weeks now, you should never, ever be ashamed or, what's the word I'm looking for? Reticent to share the gospel truth or share any truth that's found in the Bible. Remember, darkness runs away from the light, and that's exactly what we have. We have the capital T-R-U-T-H. And we have nothing to worry about, nothing to be ashamed about, nothing to hide. But anyway, here's another question that I get all the time, unless there's some other comments. Oh, I thought that was a hand in the glass. It was just at the right time there. Anybody else want to bring anything else up or talk through anything? All right. Here's another question that I get all the time, and it's a question that you get all the time as well. I'm sure of it. If you share the gospel, this is a question I think that is bound to come up at some point in your conversations. I would call it more of a protest than a question. But the protest comes out in the form of a question. In fact, I'm dealing with this very issue with three people who I've been talking to for some years at this point. But this is a very important subject. It goes something like this. Seeing that God is all-powerful and all-knowing and all-loving, why does evil exist? Why does evil exist? So that's what we're going to tackle today and next week as well. But maybe the most intense, persistent challenge that believers hear about the truth of our faith comes in the form of what we call, or what has become known as, quote unquote, the problem of evil. The problem of evil. The suffering and evil that we see all around us seems to cry out, some people might even say scream, against the existence of God. At least the God who we know as loving and the God who we know as almighty, right? This is thought by many to be the most difficult of all problems that we face as Christians, not only because of the apparent logical difficulty within our faith, our Christian outlook, our Christian worldview, but also because of the great personal confusion which any sensitive human being feels when we're confronted with the awful misery, the terrible misery and wickedness that's found all around us in the world. Man's inhumanity to man. If you have looked at the news at all this week, this is all they cover, man's inhumanity to man. In fact, I think this is the number one subject in our world today. In fact, it's been notorious in every single age of history and in every single nation of the world. The story of oppression against dignity and kindness, torture and tyranny is found everywhere in every culture. We find war and murder, greed and lust, dishonesty, lies, fear, hatred, infidelity, cruelty, poverty, racial hostilities, and I could have listed a ton more. And then we look at the natural world. We see what happens to be, what appears to be needless suffering and pain. Birth defects, parasites. I was just watching a YouTube short. There are these videos that Valerie will tell you. I just sit at night and just flip through these videos. And a lot of them are funny. Andrew and I are laughing. Val's watching a show, and I'll just start laughing. And she, what are you laughing at? And Andrew sent me one of these short videos. Well, it was this shrimp. Or no, it was a crawfish, I think. It looked like it. Anyway, it had two parasites in the gills. And this guy picked the shrimp up and was like, oh, looky here, he's got this parasite, and peeled it off of the gills of this crawfish. And then there was one on the other side, peeled it off. And it's horrible. I mean, here's this shrimp, like, slowly dying. And then there was this other one with a snail whose eye stalks, you know what I mean? They have these eye stalks where like rainbow colors going on inside them. And here he's like a zombie snail. It's a parasite that makes the snail crawl out into the open and it's literally attracting birds. So the parasite's plan is that the bird eats the snail and another snail will eat the fecal matter of the bird and there the life cycle continues. It's just, it's awful. It is awful stuff. All right? It really is. So again, I say parasites, right? And that's to say nothing of the amoeba. Have anybody seen the show Monsters Inside Me?
No.
It'll give you nightmares. Like, I am dead serious. It will give you nightmares. You will not want to go in a lake or a river or a stream ever again. I'm not kidding. It really is like... The last time I was in a natural setting of water, right? I think I was at a park, and I thought about one of these episodes where this dude jumps into this lake, and they're just swimming, having a good old time, and he ends up getting a brain-eating amoeba. And he died. It's awful. The doctors could do nothing. It was just... Anyway, and that's just one episode. You remember I watched that for a while, and I'm like, I can't watch this anymore. This is nuts, you know? Because you just think it makes you not want to go out in the world anymore. I mean, really. You could get, what's the other thing that they get in locker rooms all the time? Meningitis, right? I mean, all these things, they're horrible.
Athlete's foot.
What's that? Athlete's foot. Well, that one you could at least cure. I'm talking about these horrible bacteria and diseases that really end up killing more people than survive. To say nothing about attacks with violent animals, right? Or bigger animals than you. Bears, wolves, things like that. Radioactive mutations. We watched a series on Netflix a while ago about Chernobyl. Oh, horrible things. I mean, and the Russian government let these poor firemen and scientists they sent them in to die, literally. And the most incredible thing is a lot of those men knew that they were going to die if they went in to contain the leak, and they did it anyway. But the death that they died is a hideous, hideous death. Debilitating diseases, we've already said that. Deadly cancers, starvation, injuries, crippling injuries, typhoons, earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, on and on and on and on we could list natural disasters. So when an unbeliever looks at this real, real, actually unhappy world in which he exists, he feels that there's a strong reason to doubt the goodness of God. So he's saying to himself, why should there be so much misery? Why should all this misery be distributed in such a seemingly unjust way? After all, Dostoevsky, does anybody ever heard of his name? I hope. He was a Russian philosopher, really, Russian novelist. I encourage you to read some of his books. They're great. Anyway, he came to the United States as a... they kicked him out of Russia. I forget what that's called. Anybody want to help me out with that word?
He came to here as an exile.
Thank you. That's the word I was looking for. Exile. And his last novel is called Brothers Karamazov. It translated in English would be The Brothers... Karamazov brothers, all right? But his question in that novel, his last novel, he said, would you allow grief if you were the architect of the world? Would you permit all these miseries if you were the architect of the world? And what do you think most people say to that rhetorical question?
No.
No, of course not. Why would I do that, right? Now, I think it's very important that when you come up against that kind of objection, you remember that people who are bringing it up are often doing so because they personally have been affected by wickedness and cruelty and pain in this world. It's always important to take account of the emotional, or we would call existential, condition of the person that you're talking to. And I don't want to say it's only here, but it's especially here. I've noticed that people will bring up their own painful experiences when they're talking to you. They want to know why their brother died in childhood. They want to know why they had to lose their mother to cancer so early in life. They want to know why their young son has a large brain tumor. And those are three examples of exactly what questions I was dealing with and am dealing with. You might pray for these people in those situations. But they want to know things like that. They want answers to objections like that, to questions like that. So remember your audience. Always remember your audience. Don't make the mistake that when you're answering these objections that it's just a matter of like slicing and dicing their academic outlook on life. It's not what it is. They're not bringing up some deep philosophical side of life. It's real to them, and you need to minister to that person. And hopefully by the end of our study in the problem of evil, with quotes around it, we'll have a better idea of how this can be done. But I read a lecture recently of a philosopher who was presenting at the Russian Orthodox University, and he was lecturing on Dostoevsky's problem of evil. He used one portion of Dostoevsky's writings to show the presentation of the problem, but he also showed how Dostoevsky solved the problem himself in his own life, all right? And in talking about all of this, when he finished the lecture, he asked the audience if they had any questions. Now, these are Russian nationals in Moscow, okay? One Russian girl or a woman, I was listening to it, so I could only hear her voice. But in her voice, you could hear it cracking. You could hear the cadence of her voice. She was getting ready to cry during her question. She was definitely upset, to say the least. She said, "I understand how the problem of evil can be answered by those of us who are believers. When people who are atheists throw that question at us," she said, "but what I don't understand is how we, who are believers, can answer the problem of evil, because it seems that the righteous suffer so often." Now, to be sure, those who claim to be Christians in Moscow, right? That's why I brought it up. They've suffered for years. They are still suffering. We look at Russia. I've heard some Christians say Russians have it better than Americans right now. No, they don't. No, they don't. Go to Russia, right? Read just a little bit about what Putin has been doing to Orthodox Christians. Now, if you're a Russian Orthodox, member of the Russian Orthodox Church, Putin controls that. You're good. You can go to that church all you want. You're not going to hear the gospel free and loud and clear there. You're going to hear a Russian government-approved version of some gospel message. And to be sure, God can use that too to save people. But you're not more free in Russia than you are in the United States, for sure. But anyway, they've suffered for years, as many of you would even know from the Cold War. But she wanted to know how these sorts of things can happen if God is really in control of the universe. You see, we always need to remember that we're talking to people who don't just think about the world. They live in this world with us. We understand this. We should at least understand this. So anyway, the lecturer didn't dismiss the girl out of hand. Instead, he went on to explain his own experiences in life. He explained how God was obviously very gracious to him. And then honestly, as I was listening to it, it was obvious that God was giving him some kind of grace to respond to her the way he did. He talked to her about the problem of evil that he suffered in the world. He talked to her about the sorts of physical problems that he had with disease and so forth. And he had quite a few. Some of the injustices and hard things that he had been through. He told her that in the end, as a believer, when he wanted to cry out to God for an answer to his question, "Why have you let these things happen to me, Lord?" He explained that some of the most committed Christians struggle with God on this very issue, and his lecture went in the only direction I think he could have gone when this question came up. In fact, you can read the Psalms. And you'll see that David struggled with God on this very question. You'll see that Jeremiah, there's a whole book called
Jeremiah.
Well, Jeremiah, and what else did he have?
Lamentations.
They struggled just the same. He wondered, all these guys had wondered about these very things too.
So Joseph and his brothers.
Joseph and his brothers. So you go back to just, there's Cain and Abel. I mean, you know, it the Lord himself avenging Abel, right?
Yeah, and Zechariah was writing to the people who had come back from Babylon.
That's right. And I dare say we could go around this room and everyone share injustices and diseases and pain that you've suffered this side of heaven. And we'd all have incredible amounts to share, mm-hmm. right? I was actually going to do that, and I decided against it because we could do weeks on that very subject. Each one of us would go on and on and on, right? But we're interested in answering that question, not just continuing wallowing in that pain, okay? God gives us answer to, that's why I have in quotes, the problem of evil. It really isn't a problem for believers. It's inconsistent with unbelievers. But anyway, so whenever I'm in these conversations, it's very helpful for me, actually. The first thing I go to is Jesus. Famous line on the cross. Why, Father? Why have you forsaken me? Now that is incredible to me. It's the Lord of glory who knows everything could also suffer like that. I really don't think I've lost my humanity or my conviction about God then, just because things hurt me too, all right? You can go all over the Bible from cover to cover, including Jesus himself, who asked this very question. So please remember, when the problem of evil is brought up, it's not always being brought up by some sarcastic, philosophic academic, right? Who thinks that he's just going to whittle the Christian faith down to nothing by bringing up how many times people suffer personally. Secondly, it's important for us to remember and recognize that, actually really insist upon the serious nature and the reality of evil. It does exist. You can't just dismiss it. The subject of evil isn't just in some kind of intellectual game of chess. It's not something we can deal with carelessly, right? As if evil were something unusual or didn't happen very often. Come on, we all know it happens. It's not some relativistic choice or simply one personal way of looking at things in the world. Evil is real and evil is ugly. I'm on a grand jury through the end of June. Some of you might have already known this. It's an evil injustice that I... No, I'm kidding. I just... but anyway, every Wednesday, in my notes, you can read my notes and it says this. Every Wednesday, I have the privilege. it's hard. Every Wednesday, I have the privilege of hearing evidence collected against individuals who have been charged with various crimes. And our job is to hand down an indictment based on the preponderance of evidence. How many knew that that's what a grand jury does? I honestly didn't know until I was on the grand jury.
My sister was on it, so
I know them.
And some of the things that...
Yes.
When they went through, she said...
Although she's not supposed to tell you.
No, but...
Even though I'm getting ready to tell you on the notes, and it'll be online and everything. So anyway, I'm going to tell you a little bit. So.
But she says it was interesting to see how the system really works.
That's true. And honestly, we had a guy during the selection process, because I was listening intently. I'm a teacher, right? Everybody knows I'm a teacher, and I go through July. Well, May and June are crazy busy for me. So, and every other teacher for that matter, not just me. But I have this special busyness of a concert and everything else at the end of the year. So I was listening to every excuse that people were giving, and I was like, I'm going to use that one. I'm going to use that one. I'm going to use that one. So I'm listening to this one gentleman who's called on the judge, and he says, I don't trust the justice system. I don't trust the United States government. I don't think our elected officials are actually elected. He said like four things, like boom, 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 boom. And instead of dismissing him, the judge says, this is a perfect opportunity for you to trust the system. The prosecutor objected and went, judge, can we go to a sidebar? So we're all online doing this thing on Zoom, and they take them out of the room so we can't hear what they're discussing. The dude didn't come back. So the prosecutor outed him. Just, no, we don't want him. Get rid of this guy. But the judge was ready to have him serve. It was just, oh. So I'm number 23. For those of you who don't know, it's the last number. I was the last guy called. I was like, oh. So, and by that time, I heard 22 different people try to give excuses as to them. Well, not all of them, but various excuses. I tried them all, and the judge was just like, nope, 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 nope. You can serve, you know, every Wednesday through June 28th. But anyway, most of the time, we hear cases that only involve one individual. Usually the charge is something like drug possession or something of that nature. But
that's what my sister was saying, a general.
Generally, that's what it
like
is. Small crimes,
like that,
shoplifting, things like that. You get a few murders and things like that. But those are the cases that are hard to hear. And that's what I'm saying. There are cases that are hard to hear. And I've been on this jury for about 2 months already. So the other members and I have become quite acquainted with one another. And many of you know I'm a people person, so I just start talking to anybody in the room anyway. So I'm going to know the people in the room. Whether or not they want to know me is a different story. But anyway, several weeks ago, I was talking to one of my friends. He is a friend now. His name's Stumpy. I was talking to Stumpy about adoring God. He's a Christian, and we were talking about adoring God. It was a really cool conversation. Well, one of the other jurors in the back of the room overheard us talking about adoring God, and he really got ticked off. He really got ticked off about it. And if I remember the situation correctly, I was really trying to think, what was the case that we were listening to? I think during that week, we heard a particularly terrible case of child molestation. We had to listen to testimony that painted a pretty vivid picture of a child being molested. Child being at the very least abused, right? And this guy who overheard us said, how can you speak of adoring a God who would allow that kind of a thing to happen? Mm. What would you do? What would you say? What was he really asking? Why? That's what he was really asking. Why would God allow that? Some people might be thrown off by that question, but and it's not that I'm all this, I'm smarter than you. I just want you to know I was prepared for that response, right? And it's pretty normal, by the way. That response is almost like you're going to hear that at some point, all right? But I wanted him to be outraged. You want them to be outraged. That's where you're going to start. You need to appreciate the outrage. I didn't want him to be casual about a horrible case of child molestation. Neither would you, right? I said, that really makes you angry, doesn't it? And he goes, yeah, it really does. And I said, it makes me angry too. And you see, by the end of our lesson, why it's important when people bring up this problem of evil, they're bringing it up because it is actually evil. But how do they explain that? How can they explain that if they have a relativistic outlook, if they have a chance explosion that created this world? How can you say something is evil? What is even evil? Define it. And they can't. But they do know the God who created them, as Paul tells us in Romans. They do know he exists. That's why they can say something is unequivocally evil. But it's something that they want to condemn even. And that's the very interesting part. Every single person on the jury was sickened by what they heard. Every single person in the jury wanted that person, whether he's guilty or not, thrown to, just torn to bits, really, you know? But it's important to take it very seriously. You never dismiss the fact that they want to condemn the evil that they know exists. The question is, and we'll finish with this today, how do you define evil if God doesn't exist? Remember back to the first question that we reviewed. How can you prove God's existence? Without God, you can't prove anything at all, including the existence of evil.
That goes for good as well.
Exactly. Exactly.
How do we know what's good? How can we recognize goodness?
You can't have
without
evil
God.
Unless you have good.
And we're going to we're going to get there. No, Tiff, say that. Say that. Come on.
You have to have something to compare evil to. So if there's no good, you have to have good to.
Yeah, and I know where I liked where you're going first with that. But yes, that is exactly where we're going to discuss all these things. And I'm sorry to end here. Maybe it's the cliffhanger for next week, which is really good, actually. But yeah, we have a cliffhanger next week. We'll dig into this. And actually, you might think that Bill's going to go into all this deep philosophy. No, I'm not. It's actually very, very simple. It's very simple. It's just things that I had never heard before. And once you heard it, it's like you cannot forget it. It's impossible to forget it. You're like, oh, yeah, I know that. How come I didn't think of that? And that's exactly how I felt when I heard these lectures. All right? It's very interesting stuff. All right. Let's pray. Pastor, you want to close us in prayer?
Father, we thank you for reaching out to us when we were sinners and doing good in our lives. Father, we thank you for giving us the opportunity to be ministers of your word. And Father, as people come across us with different thoughts and philosophies, Father, may we be able to stand and say that you are the Lord and that you have provided a way for them to come to you. I ask, Father, that you bless us throughout the rest of this morning. In